Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Provincial State of Mind with myself, Owen Harrison, Jeff Neville, and Tom Savage. This is a podcast focused on all four Irish provincial sides in both the URC and European competitions, as well as the national sides. We discuss what happened the previous weekend, what we can expect from each province in their upcoming games, as well as any major off-field news. So, gents, what's been going on this week in your world? Jeff?
Not much, no, to be honest with you. We hosted the biggest event in women's rugby in Leinster on Sunday. So that was pretty cool. We hosted the women's finals, cup finals there. So that was cool. And aside from that, just sneak and sleep wherever it comes. And that's about the height of it. That is genuinely my life.
Nice. What about you, Tom?
I've been fretting over my NCT, but I shouldn't have fret. The car passed with flying colours. Even though I was still there at the window looking at it.
I was about to ask, are you one of those window standers?
Yeah, it's just like, survive.
I'm the opposite. I'm a chair sitter. I'm like, if it's going to fail, it's going to fail. Like me looking at it. Don't push that button.
Do you know, yeah. we have a baby seat in the back of the car, obviously. I came out after after it passed, and I went in and was just putting in the new disc and stuff like that. And I went to the back seat and I was just like, that's weird. They installed the baby seat correctly, as in fully correctly from where it was. Like it was safe the way it was. But now like all the stuff was like, there was like the seatbelt wrapped around it and stuff. And I was just like, this is the happiest place on earth, the NCT Centre.
It's a nice touch.
Yeah, nice.
That's a Brucey bonus.
I remember going to get the car NCT maybe 3 years ago, and your man in the NCT Centre asked me if I had the logbook, and I said I didn't. Like, it just didn't occur to me to bring it. Like, and I think you're actually meant to bring it.
Yeah.
He said, you have the logbook. And I says, no, I don't. Sorry, I forgot it. And he was like, oh, I don't know if we can take this car then. And I said, well, why not? Like, and he goes, well, there's no real proof that it's yours. I was like, I didn't steal a car and bring it for a fucking NCT. Like, that's not like if I was going to steal a car, I think getting it tested for roadworthiness is probably the last thing I would do with it first. But
like you're there, and you kind of hear police sirens in the background. You're
yeah,
just like,
yeah, what? Yeah. I just got
real. Isn't that what a true criminal would say, Jeff?
Yeah, I was that deep into it. But no, your man just kind of looked at me and he just kind of nodded as if to say, like, you're actually 100% right. Why would you steal a car and bring it for an NCT? So it was fine. That passed too. But I just sat in the chair, pretended I didn't care while I sweated profusely, secretly. Yeah,
I was just like looking, arms behind my back. Just like, come on, you can do this.
Did anyone get up to anything this weekend?
I got my hair cut this week.
Oh, you did? You did.
It's lovely.
I cut my hair this morning, but nobody noticed.
I got mine cut this week. I said, I must say, I like current barber. I'm very happy. It's in, out, uses the blades, gets it all done very quickly. No messing, no talking. That's the important bit.
Do you have to book?
Book?
Yeah, do you have to book?
This is a walk-in.
My place is only a book.
Oh, you have to book? Jeez, yeah. That's very...
And it's just a normal barber. Like, it's not in fancy. It's just a normal barber, but they switch to a system. So if you walk in now, they're like, do you have an appointment? And you'd be like, no. They're like, well, sorry, you have to make an appointment. Which is great and which isn't great, because I use the same barber all the time. And like, I can just check if she's on. I'm like, there you go. Happy days. But what I don't like is the fact that sometimes there's a lot of old men that come in and they say, do you have an appointment? And they say, no. And they say, well, you have to book. And you're just kind of like, it's a bit of an ageist system at times. You know, like, I'm not saying everybody who's old can't use a mobile phone, but like I know for a fact, like my dad would struggle with that. Like, he'd be like, oh, how do I get about this now? Like, so it's not great, that side of things. And I recognize that, but it is nice knowing at 3:30, I'm going in for a haircut. Like, and even if there's a queue, like it's not a queue from my barber, if that makes sense. It's nice that, I don't know why I'm still talking about this.
I haven't been in the barber since 2010. I'd say.
Not even for the eyebrows, no?
No, I do those myself. Believe
risky,
it or not.
Yeah. Risky.
That is. You could end up looking very 90s where you put the little go faster stripes on them.
I had that.
Oh, no, you
people,
didn't.
People,
did you?
People might not believe it. Like, I've had my hair bleached white. I had it colored red, blue, blonde,
Will you send us a picture of you with hair?
I will.
Genuinely, like, into the WhatsApp group.
I will. I'll see. I think I have one somewhere. I will. It's freaky. You won't even be just like, what? But yeah, I used to have my hair. Like, I remember going home on Christmas with my head bleached, like, white, like Ric Flair white. And went in, and the mother was just like,
you've ruined Christmas.
As in, this, what have you done? So what she did was that she made, I mean, this is in college now. She made me go to her local hairdresser to get it dyed back to the approximate kind of brown that it was. And yeah, I looked like a clone. I looked like a clone who'd come in that they got a few small details wrong after it. And yeah, but I had frosted tips, the whole lot. No wonder I'm bald. But at least I enjoyed it, but it was there.
That sounds like a very Brian O'Driscoll sort of journey through the hairstyles there.
Oh, geez. Like, if you look at Brian, you know, Bod's frosted tips, like, I probably had frosted tips around the same time. When was that?
Was it because of him or just a lovely coincidence?
No, the frosted tips were just kind of in at the time.
I
was a slave to fashion.
I'm looking
that
at you here.
That would have been maybe about early to mid-noughties, I would have said.
Was it? I had my hair, my frosted tips at around 2002. So I'm not sure if Bod was in his frosted tips era at that stage.
Yeah, it would have been close to that, I think. Yeah, somewhere
I'm staring at you here, and I just cannot picture hair on top of the head.
Really?
I'm
going to see now if I have any of these photos here of me not bald.
Like, even like, did you have like, did you gel up a fringe kind of a thing? This is what I'm so intrigued about.
When I was losing my hair or when I had hair?
Both. Like,
oh, I had like, my hair was like, I had huge, like my hair was like high. I had like long hair at one point that was like down around my shoulder. But I had like, my hair was kind of high, like that kind of up kind of hair that everybody used to have in the early 2000s.
I can't wait for these photos. Yeah, because
I mean, you probably would have assumed. Yeah, look, I obviously did have hair
at some point. Yeah, obviously.
By, at some point. But yeah, no, it's yeah, I had hair. I was an individual who had hair, and I was like, I had lots of different styles. Now we just have one style.
That's probably the quote of the episode already. I was an individual who had hair.
To see,
sometimes sentences are said on this podcast and I'm like, how did we get here?
My mother sent me on a picture there the other day, not the other day, it was a couple of months ago now, looking for it, where she just said, look at the state of that, because even they can't picture me with hair.
Just can't picture it.
Yeah, we'll have to wait for that.
Well, here's me as a, you won't be able to see this now, but here's me as a child wearing a fedora.
I can see hair underneath that, yeah.
Yeah, see?
Yeah. That's very sort of ska music. That's all I can see in that.
Ska music, yeah. Yeah. And it's like...
your toy saxophone is somewhere else. And...
So this podcast continue with the episode.
This podcast has now just gone down to us looking at childhood pictures of Tom.
None of the listeners will be able to see or even sort of grasp.
And... work away. I'll find this picture. Work away with the rest of the thing. I'll tag in whenever I hear anything I'm interested in.
Right. Well, we might as well try and move on to some rugby and talk about it. We'll start with Dublin Saracens against
Stop that. Do not bring your mentions into this.
Like, my mentions are bad, but they're nothing on Owen's mentions.
But Owen has lit the fire himself. Like, he's just...
To be fair,
I've thrown the milk bottle with the petrol in it.
Yeah.
You have thrown the baby out with the bathwater. You're literally just shy of sending a tweet saying, I don't know, I hate Leinster.
Fuck you.
Full stop.
Yeah.
And...
yeah.
Basically, what he puts into the WhatsApp group.
Yeah. But that's private. till it's not.
I'm just copying Jeff's WhatsApps, putting them out on
word for word.
I apparently love Leinster. Myself and Tom talked about this last week. We're big fans.
That's true. We're buzzing this week, actually.
Yeah. Bleeding blue.
Bleeding blue. Yeah, I think I might have used that as well. Yeah, it was Leinster 40, La Rochelle 13. A huge statement win from Leinster.
Massive.
Crazy big. Like last week, last week, myself and Tom went for, well, you went for Leinster, I went for La Rochelle, but we both went for 2 points and said, like, we wouldn't be surprised if it went either way. And then Leinster hit 40 points. 40.
I think one thing we didn't take into account was, and I think this is something that we kind of have to get out of the way early, because it is relevant. Not the whole story, but relevant. La Rochelle did look very leggy almost immediately.
They did, and that's fair.
And they were put away ruthlessly. Like,
they were, yeah. Like, you can only play what's in front of you.
And oh, 100%. 100%. But I think part of the reason why it wasn't as tight as what we thought was because La Rochelle, I don't think they were 100%. But
yeah,
that you just kind of have to get that out of the way to be fair, which we are in this podcast.
Very fair. Very fair, very even.
Very even. Almost at the point of, are we too even?
Yeah.
Have we gone too far?
Too unbiased, I think. But no, they were, Jesus, they were good. Like, in my eyes, it's probably a Toulouse-Leinster final.
It's hard to see beyond that.
Yeah.
I think Saints could, the way Leinster play, Saints could cause them some problems, I think, with their counter-transition. The way Leinster
Saints are very good, but I don't see them Leinster for the full
80 minutes. They don't have the power, I don't think, up front to compete with Leinster over the 80 minutes. But I think there are certain occasions where if they can take Leinster through a couple of phases, and then get Leinster to kick the ball back to them, if it's unstructured enough there, I think Saints do have the backline players and the ability to counterattack off transition ball like that to cause a couple of problems. But I don't see them doing enough over 80 minutes to do that. I thought Leinster stuck to the game plan really well. They used their line speed, quick defense. They won the game line battles. I thought, it was probably the best game I've seen from Tadhg Furlong, I think, in maybe the last 3 years.
He had a serious game, yeah. He was top class, like, and especially his breakdown work was exceptional.
Oh, the ruck work was just unbelievable. Yeah, he was burying guys in there. And they played off ball. They continued to use that big kicking game. They used Lowe and Osborne specifically with those long kicks, and they played territory. And I thought, even looking at it, like, you look at La Rochelle, they had Delan as the second lock. Mother of Jesus, Thomas just after showing a photograph of him with hair. That is not Tom. I'm just going to say that is not Tom. That is just some random photo he must have taken from the internet.
That's like a picture of your dad from the 80s. That's wild. Oh my God.
That's 1990s anyway. I can tell from the shirt.
1990s for sure.
Yeah. Right, back to the Leinster game.
Harry Potter. look at what you've become, Harry.
Leinster played off ball. They won the territory battle. La Rochelle had Alton Delan as a second row rather than the half lock. I don't think they had the power, as Tom, you said, they looked leggy. They looked like the travel had got to them. And then Leinster, once they got into that final third, they decided to play ball and they were able to win the power battle and win the collisions, get over the line. They could have had another couple of tries there on top of that as well. Early in the game, they were, you know, La Rochelle held them out. But La Rochelle had no answer for them. And it's hard to see anyone or Toulouse now at this stage even really competing with them over the 80 minutes.
It was some weekend of quarterfinals or of, of quarterfinals, like overall. Like, I don't know, each game was bananas.
That Bordeaux-Quins game was just absolutely...
Never seen anything like it.
Exceptional.
That's like something from the 2000s.
It was that was unbelievable. Exceptional. And even when they go ahead, was it like 2-3 minutes left? Like, you're thinking, this is it. And then Quins go the other way and score. Like, exceptional.
That was one of those games that you walk out to make, you know, put the kettle on to make a cup of tea, and you come back and like there's like four tries after being scored.
Oh, it's crazy. I was actually watching that with my dad, and he wouldn't be a big rugby fan, like, but he was like, "Is every game like this?" And I was like, "I fucking wish every game was like this." But no, yeah, I think, to be honest, I think it's Leinster's, no pun intended, but it's Leinster's to lose at this point.
That was a statement performance. That's one that,
yeah,
you look at that and go, La Rochelle were kind of such a problem team, bogey team for Leinster almost. For the game to go that decisively was huge. Because again, like, we were all thinking, I think most people I saw were kind of thinking it's going to be fairly tight. But
and respectfully so. Even Leinster fans were like, you know, I'm like, during the week, any Leinster fans I saw on Twitter and stuff like that were like, I'm properly nervous about this game, as you would be, like, especially given the past. Like, and even I know they won in round one. That was a tight contest as well. Like, but credit to Leinster, blew them away.
I think that La Rochelle looked a little like Dante didn't look like the same guy. Skelton looked like he'd lost a few steps. They were missing a few guys as well, La Rochelle. There were big, important players for them. But they had no answer to Leinster once they got going. That momentum that Leinster have, it was after halftime. When once they get on that roll like that, it's so hard to stop them.
Yeah.
Like they end up blowing you away in a 10-minute block, and you're just like, fuck, that's the game. It's gone.
How do you stop that? How do you stem that? Like,
no mistake rugby. And La Rochelle, they were like, they look back at the first half and think, every time we worked our way into Leinster's half, we conceded a penalty.
Yeah.
And they just got marched back. They spent most of the game in their own half, like most of the first half in their own half.
They had no territory at all to work from. They had no platform. I thought Leinster's lineout was interesting. I think there was only, with Sheehan, there was only like two or three throws that didn't go to the front. They were willing just to get ball and take it in and start the play again. They weren't using the line out as a strike.
As a launch.
Yeah. Which was, you know, that was completely the opposite to, like, if you think about what they did for the final last year. The line out was the primary strike platform to launch. And they changed that. The scrum was 50-50. There wasn't an awful lot in it.
And I think
until the replacements came on.
By the way, we were talking about this last week. Me and Jeff, gurus on here.
Do you remember that episode on where you jumped on 58 minutes into it? Remember that episode? That's the one we were talking about.
You probably didn't hear this segment.
No, because I didn't listen back.
We were really wise. Because our love of Leinster, we know how our beloved Leo works. The guru here, was talking about Jenkins starting. And I think it worked. He was scrummaging behind Furlong. They put Joe McCarthy in behind Porter. And I think it pretty much went as intended. They rarely went backwards until the replacements came on. And then things started to get a little bit ice skatey. But at that point, the game was gone. So it didn't really matter. But interesting from Leinster in that regard. It seems that they did learn from the last game and from the previous games, and they caught him.
Yeah, a huge win. It's a real, as I said, real statement win. I don't think there's much more that Leinster can do in that regard. They've set their stall out. They've now going down to South Africa to play the Lions, which is this Saturday lunchtime. I haven't seen a full squad list yet.
I haven't seen a squad either. I'd be surprised if there wasn't many internationals there.
I think this, from what it seems to have been, it's they're sending the kids and a couple of fringe players who played against La Rochelle. So I imagine they're resting a lot of the internationals. But it'll be interesting to see who the senior players that have gone. The Lions are just outside the playoff places at the moment.
Dangerous team.
They have Yeah, but they have four of their remaining five games at home. At altitude.
They are tough at altitude.
Yeah. So, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be a surprise to see them making the top eight in some form. I think how this game is very tough to call without seeing teams beforehand, and particularly that Leinster team.
We don't know who they have, so it'll be a difficult one. I'll go for the Lions with a narrow win, just because they'll have a lot of advantages here that Leinster will be struggling to make up on a week's notice, less than a week's notice.
I'm going for the Lions on this one too.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Lions on that. The other news then that has been taking up a lot of
bandwidth, let's say.
Bandwidth, yes, or media space, was the off-field news for Leinster this week, and there's quite a bit of it. Jordy Barrett signed on for a six-month stint next season. Dan Sheehan gets his central contract confirmed.
No shock there.
No, Jemison Gibson-Park reported to be getting a central contract, which would make it 10. Mm-hmm. 13 central contracts, total. 10 for Leinster.
Three total. Between the other three provinces.
Yeah, one each. Yeah. And then the last bit of news then is Tyler Blaindall has been confirmed as Andrew Goodman's replacement as the attack coach.
A lot of former Munster guys in there at the moment.
Yeah, there does seem to be, like, you've got Jenkins, Snyman, you know, Blaindall going up.
Lean Aber
there as well.
And you know? Blaindall, yeah. Funny that.
I think the Jordy Barrett one is, for me, it's a little bit strange, but when you get someone of that quality, it's hard to turn down if you're allowed.
To be honest, I said this last night to someone. If I was allowed to sign someone of his caliber and I had the means to do it, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Like that for me is the start and end of it. And
I don't think
people can be as salty as they want about it and everything. And I understand that side of it as well, don't get me wrong. But like at the end of the day, if you're allowed and you can, you're going to. On the other hand, go on.
You know, sorry, I don't think there's any issue with Leinster signing Jordy Barrett on the face of it. I don't think he blocks anybody. Like I've seen people say, oh, he's going to block Jamie Osborne. I don't see that, to be honest. I see Jamie Osborne taking a lot from him. And ultimately, he's there for 6 months. I suppose what's been at the forefront of a lot of people's minds is it's a reminder now of the discrepancy in funding between Leinster and the other provinces, never mind the rest of the URC. And how distorting that will be if it continues to go on the trajectory it currently is. This is a game where the money you can put in the field, the wages you spend are hugely important in success. You look at Saracens, you look at Toulon, they're probably the biggest examples of it. And I know people like to think that because Leinster produce most of their players that they aren't very well paid. That's not the case. They're very well paid guys. And look, yes, Leinster 100% should hang on to all of them. That's only fair, I think. My point is that when you have the space that's created, and by the way, I think Snyman and Barrett are privately funded from up by all accounts. I think that if you want the best for Irish rugby, I think that you want a form of equity where we won't be saying in April of 2025 that, look, Leinster aren't getting the test that, or they aren't getting the test and the examination that they need from the Interpros or whatever else. I think there's ways that you can counterbalance it without going take away those contracts from Leinster. And to be honest, anybody who says that any of those guys don't deserve a central contract, if we say a central contract is a reward for being a very good player, that to me is nonsense. They're very good players. If that's the system, they 100% deserve it. But I do feel in an environment where Munster have to cut their budget, Ulster obviously are, you know, they've had to cut their budget and release guys. I think that there's, and Connacht as well are there. I'm not fully down with what Connacht's budget is, how big or small it is relative to the other three. But I do feel that, is there a way that we can counterbalance this? Is there a way where we can make it easier, say, for example, for the other provinces to get easier dispensation for a non-Irish qualified player, not to have them for 7 years or 8 years, but to go, this guy is going to get us to this young player who we've ID'd here. He's going to get us there in 2 or 3 years. If it's a loose head, if it's a hooker, if it's a tight head, I think that should be allowed. Just as a way to kind of counterbalance and keep things relatively even without saying to Leinster, you have to lose something.
I think there's a way that it can be done. What you're talking about there, Tom, I think is bringing in players, right? From the outside. I think there's a way potentially to do it slightly differently, which is what you do is you almost look at it in a sort of a depth chart way. And you say that for each of the provinces, your number one guy, your number two guy, your number three guy, they all have a set sort of range and level on it. And the top guys at number one, if they're of national interest and deserving of central contracts or national importance, then they get a top up on top of that provincial amount. So each province has their set budget for those things and they can pay up to a certain amount. If they're wanted and first choice for Ireland, they get paid out of a central fund to top that up. What that does is it means you can't overpay for the second and third level and stockpile guys within provinces. So you can stay at your second, you can stay at your home province and try to become the Ireland backup lock or backup hooker or prop or whatever, but you're going to be paid as a number two at a provincial level and that can't be topped up. So what you end up with then is if you want to move, or say if you're willing to move, you go to another province and you become their first choice player. And that means that the players of national interest should be playing first choice within the provinces and they should be starting all the big games. And that means that you have movement at a second level, which brings that in and strengthens the Irish core. You can still add to that with NIQs, but you shouldn't need to necessarily bring in 4 or 5 of them at a time, you know, just to strengthen a province.
I wouldn't say you need 4 or 5. I think if it's a case that you can maybe get maybe 2 or 3 in positions that where it's traditionally been quite difficult to do so, I think maybe that might help. But it's, I do feel that there's a lot of the defensiveness is what you've kind of brought up there. Cause I've been talking about this on social media today and I've seen a lot of defensiveness where people are kind of jumping straight away. This is about Leinster. I don't know about you, but I would feel the same if it was Munster. And people go, well, it was Munster in the 2000s. No, it was not. No, it was not. I feel that what we don't want is the Dublin GA football to become rugby in this country. I think any steps we can take to avoid that from happening, even if it means tilting the scales towards the other three provinces for a while, should be done. Because I think when you allow a kind of a situation where it almost kind of has its own inertia now. So because you have 10 central contracts, that means you have extra space that's there and you can get dispensation for a lock or, you know, in this case, a 12 or, you know, a utility back, world class, maybe a tight head as well, as is a rumor. You have that space and you have the dispensation because you can say, well, look, we've got guys away at international level. So we need these guys for X, Y, and Z. So as a result, when it comes to the time for, we'll say, interpros, where in theory you're playing against your competition for national spots, Leinster have RG Snaiman, they have Jordy Barrett, they have non-Irish qualified tight head on top of the quality they already have. It becomes very difficult for good players in the other provinces to show how good they are in that context. If we'll say, because it seems to be whoever wins those games gets a bit of a bump when it comes to representation, which then leads to more opportunities to earn central contracts, which leads to more financial space, more benefits. I know what people are saying when, oh, look, the other provinces should be producing more players. I think they are producing really good players. They don't have a whole lot of opportunities at the moment. That's just the way it is. Look, it is what it is. But I think there's ways to approach this where it isn't framed as Leinster being punished or gifts being bestowed on the other provinces. I feel that there's a way to talk about it where it doesn't go down that road, because a lot of the counter arguments I've seen today have been, it's kind of so childish and naive, I feel I need to put a leash on them in a supermarket. It's like, you can talk about this stuff in a way that isn't, Leinster should have all their central contracts taken away. And do you know what? All of them should be put into Munster. Every single one of them. Like, people like to frame it like that because I think to engage with the point, honestly, means some uncomfortable thoughts, I suppose, about what kind of advantages could you have and should you have in a situation where there's a kind of a rugby ecosystem to be balanced, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and look, the only thing I'll say about this is there's now talk I've seen of a review of the central contracting system. And I think that would be welcome if it wasn't for the fact that David Nusifora is supposedly leading that review. You know, the guy who effectively has handed out all these central contracts, is responsible for it, is under his own KPIs, is needs to get Champions Cup to meet his targets, and is doing this all and putting these all in place before the next guy arrives. It's, you know,
like I do feel in the long run that I think a sort of a player of national interest style deal for all of them, because I don't know about you, Jeff, like it sometimes feels with central contracts that they're almost like a pre-cap, if that makes sense, because to have a central contract comes with a status that's almost like, it's almost like a different version of getting capped for Ireland. Is to get a central contract is like, yeah, that's a status a guarantee on itself. Yeah. Like yeah. With I think was it Donica Ryan? He was taken off a central contract and offered the same money on a provincial deal. But to him, it was like, well, it's not the same. The money's the same, but the status is not the same.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that might be probably is a very individual, like, I would just say, I don't think anybody can answer that bar the players themselves. It's probably a very individual mindset or perspective on it. But I think sometimes people get too hung up on the idea of a central contract. Like, oh, he should be on a central contract, or why isn't he on a central contract, or why is he getting a central contract? A bit like a player coming in to a team, you know, in terms of, you know, people talking about blocking or whatever, like, I don't think a central contract would be enough to block a guy, but I do think maybe there's an added bit of pressure. I didn't think it before, maybe a couple of years ago, but maybe an added bit of pressure. Like, if you have a guy who's on a central contract and you're not selecting him, maybe it's a case of, well, why would he have one to begin with? I'm not saying like you're pound of flesh or anything like that, but almost a case of, well, like, he has a central contract for a reason. He's probably going to be in. But in terms of a sign of status, oh, I think that's very much up to the individual player. Like, there's one or two players that you'd know there flat out who, if you said, like, oh, well, would you be concerned by the status of what a central contract gives you in terms of to the public? They'd flat out be like, no, I couldn't care less. So I don't know, quite an individual perspective.
Well, I was kind of speaking more from that, if you were to remove central contracts as a concept, do you take away something that is a really nice thing to have? It's almost like a sort of a badge of honor. Like, if it's a, you know, if they're all player of national interest deals where there is no central contract anymore, everything that a central contract has come to mean, do you lose something?
Do you lose something
in your ability to retain guys?
I don't think so. Like, there's still that rule that you have to be in Ireland to play international rugby. So,
never written down anywhere, actually. That's just one of those.
Do you know what's one that got me as well is, I never actually thought about it until someone asked me flat out about the whole NIQ thing, about, let's say, non-Irish qualified players coming to play in Ireland and kind of being not allowed, almost. Someone asked me, is that not a... Oh, and you'd probably know the answer to this one, but, like, you can't do that.
It would be illegal if it was written down.
Yeah, that's one of those things.
I suppose, yeah.
But it's not. It's more on a case-by-case basis. And
it will never happen, and it will never be challenged legally, because the provinces are subsidiaries of the IRFU. It's all the same entity, and you can never see one of those taking the IRFU to court to make, try and make them sign someone.
Please sack me immediately after this case, please.
Yeah,
But it's one of those things where, like, on the face of it, yeah, but it's come on a case by case basis mainly. So before, you've probably heard stuff about how, you're only allowed four non-Irish qualified guys. That's not the case. That's not the case at all. You can't sign a non-Irish qualified player to replace a non-Irish qualified player. That hasn't been true for a while either. It is very much on a case by case basis, and it is way more difficult to get dispensation for a front row forward. That's been the case for the last number of years. Unless there's a very pressing situation that suggests that you should have it. In this case, it would be Leinster signing Michael Alalatoa to replace Andrew Porter because he was switching over to the Lucid side. Completely understandable, by the way. Then the other one was Stephen Kitshoff getting signed by Ulster, which was just kind of out of the blue. It was like, not sure how that happened.
And that was after Tomáš Allen as well.
Yeah, and it's like...
Well, that sort of says more about the governance situation in Ulster than anything else, I think.
Yeah, they were just kind of weird aberrations, it felt like. And Rory Sutherland was there as well, wasn't he?
Yeah,
and I think he was, yeah.
So it seems like for the most part anyway, there's a couple of like that are not intended side effects of some of those concepts, we call them, where you're almost better off having nobody in a position so you can get permission to get a non-Irish qualified player than you are to have a backup at test level, because you have to pay for the backup anything from 100% to 50%, while Leinster get the starter for free. So it's almost kind of like that's something that's kind of like what would you call it, a side effect or an unintended consequence of it.
Knock on of that. Like if you think about it, Leinster get the starter tight head for free from central contracts. They then get a base salary amount for the NIQ backup that they have within that. Whereas the other provinces, as you say, will have to pay a certain amount just even to get their starter there. And that's where that funding sort of comes from. But look, I think we've talked enough about that. We'll move on to the other provinces. And
other provinces?
There are other provinces? Are there? My God. You wouldn't think so. Has someone told David Newsafora about this? I think this is something he should hear, really. Clermont 53, Ulster 14. Not a good week for Ulster.
A tough game.
Will we just skip on?
A tough one. I thought that Ulster would win this game. I felt that Clermont have not been playing well recently. And do you know what it looked like when I turned on the game? It looked like you're in the south of France. It's a Sunday. It's roasting. And you're getting pumped in the Stade Marcel Michelin. And it's like, this is familiar. Feels like something I've seen before.
33 unanswered points in the second half.
For Ulster, look, I don't think anybody would look at them and say that they're the finished product now. I think that whatever project they were under previously, that's kind of scratched now, and they're kind of back to square one to a certain extent.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd actually fully agree on that one, to be honest.
They're not even back to square one yet. That's going to be the start of next season once they get rid of the likes of Kitsoff, who's
going back feeling, to the Stormers and stuff. I have a feeling they'll stick with Richie Murphy for maybe 1 or 2 years. I think maybe that's sensible, actually. They'll have to focus on youth, I think, a lot, because again, their budget situation, there's not money there to, because there was that rumor in Rugby Pass where they're looking at offering 150k to Aaron Cruden to come in as a 10 for next year.
A 35-year-old who hasn't played since 2022, is it?
Yeah, and when he last played, it was in Japan for the, I don't know.
I think he has some NPC games.
Oh, he does. Semi-pro to a certain extent.
Yeah, but even then they're very limited.
Yeah, that's the market that Ulster are operating in. And look, it is what it is. There's no point going back over that again. But like, I just feel that they really, and this game kind of showed it, where it just seemed like they rode it a fair bit. They started well enough. They had a few good moments in the first half, but then second half, it just felt that there was that collapse there. And I think the only way out of it is through it, I think. There's pain to come. and hope they're better off on the other side. They've got quality. Like Stuart McCluskey is a fantastic player. You have guys there, like as in, I think the Nathan Doak at 10. I'm not sure if that's going to work going forward. They've got quality as well in their pack. They've got good young players there, but it just feels that they need to find a few more guys from somewhere, be that in the internal Irish market, maybe in their academy structure, to see what they have there coming through, or maybe if they can pick up some guys this off season. And this game kind of was an example of just a team who have quality, but it just feels that those 80-minute performances aren't really there unless, I mean, we saw against Montpellier, there was what, a red card and two or three yellow cards. I think that they're in need of a bit of a reset. And they've got a tough game coming up this Friday against Cardiff. I think that's Cardiff. A real sleeper, difficult game.
I think so as well. I think like Cardiff they've lost their last four games in the URC, but like they lost, what was it, 16-12 to Connacht, 33-20 to Leinster, 17-13 to Glasgow, and 20-15 to Munster. They're four difficult enough opponents, and they're not losing them by huge amounts. They've put in some decent performances, but they haven't quite got over the line yet. And I think that's something that Cardiff will be looking at this and sort of seeing Ulster in a bit of turmoil and say, I think they're targeting this game.
And Cardiff are really good. Like, I think Cardiff they're underrated. I think the level where they're at in the table doesn't reflect the quality they have. Like, that was a tough game against them in Thomond Park there a few weeks ago. Mm. Like, I think that they have quality. There's test quality in that team. They're on a big losing streak, but I feel they'll come in with a lot more confidence than what Ulster will. I mean, that could be completely wrong, but it just feels that Cardiff have, that they know that they're better than their results are showing. Whereas I feel with Ulster, it seems to be too much turmoil there. Like, they've shown some better attacking work than what they have in the first half of the season, I think. But I think that's still in its very formative stages. I still think that they haven't got the roles exactly right for what I'm kind of projecting what Richie Murphy will look for. I think that they need somebody at 10, although I think Jake Flannery is really good. I think that they'll look for somebody there, I think, just to take some of the heat off him. You know, you look at Stockdale and Ballacoon, two quality, like, power winger build players to a certain extent. McCluskey, fantastic player in midfield. You have James Hume, really good player, but you've got the likes of Jude Postlethwaite coming as well. You've got McCann in their back row, looks like a quality player.
Sheridan as well.
Sheridan, I like to look at him. Harry Sheridan's a good player.
Yeah. And if you
look
at, you know, those, there's a couple more there, yeah.
There is quality there in Ulster. Like, Nathan Doak, I think, is a good scrum half. I'm not sure if he's like the player that maybe he looked like he might have been at under 20 level yet. But like, I think that there's quality there. It's just, how do they get the best out of it? And like, to be fair, look, the season kind of went off the rails for a bit there, but like, this team beat Leinster in the RDS not so long ago. Like, there is quality there. And I think that they have in the likes of Tom O'Toole, in the likes of like Marty Moore, like Alan O'Connor, Treadwell. I think Treadwell is a very, very good player. Like, they have quality there as well. They have a good front five, I think. It's just, how do they pull this all together? And I do think the best thing for them is if they can get money together and dispensation for a good veteran 10. I'm not sure if that's Aaron Cruden. I think that could help them a lot. If he's playing in the style that Richie Murphy really wants, I think they can kind of get back on the horse pretty quickly. But I think recruitment, who they bring into the academy this year, how they use their academy that's already there, that's going to be the big things going forward. Because, I mean, realistically, the money isn't there. And I think because the money isn't there, expectations should be tempered as well. I'm not sure anybody should be levering too much pressure on Ulster Rugby in the next year or two, because, I mean, there's obviously going to be fan expectation, but I mean, there has to be realism here as well.
Ulster are in a difficult spot because they're eighth in the URC table at the moment. sorry, they have Connacht in 10th and Lions in 11th. Lions, as we said, have four of their remaining five games at home.
And the fifth one's still in South Africa.
Yeah, so they don't have to travel. Ulster have to remain in the top eight and get Champions Cup for next season, I think, to get the money that they need to sign the players. Because if you start losing that money that comes in with the Champions Cup, even a drop down to Challenge Cup can mean a difference of a couple of hundred thousand in terms of, and that's signing a good player, whether it be a 10 or whatever, it's the difference in it. And that's their biggest problem. I do think, as you said, Tom, they're going to need time to bed in what they want to do and what Richie wants to do. But I think all he can do at the moment is patch it up and get to pre-season and lay the foundations there and try the build. So they've somehow got to hang on to 8th or possibly even 7th if the Sharks win the Challenge Cup. Because 8th could be that spot that will.
Yeah, I feel they will get the results they need to get that. But it, if they don't win on was it Friday against
Friday
Cardiff,
night, yeah.
Things could get pretty sticky for them.
Yeah, that needs to be a win. End off.
Yeah,
it just needs to be a win.
Cardiff are good though.
I'm gonna go for Cardiff in that game. I think this is Cardiff sitting there waiting for this. And I think Ulster are vulnerable at the moment. I'd love to see them get that win and stay in the sort of the top eight and the battle for that. But I think this is potentially one that will catch them out.
I'm going to go with an Ulster win.
I'm going to go with a dogged 2 or 3 point Ulster win. But I could easily see Cardiff as well.
Yeah, moving on
hedging
then to
my bets.
Hedging your bets, that's nice.
I'm going to go with Ulster, but it could be Cardiff.
Lock of the week.
Lock that up.
Lock of the week. Benetton 39, Connacht 24. This was an ugly game for Connacht. I haven't seen that many balls bouncing in a backfield for a long while.
Last time you were doing GA training, I'd say.
Yeah. Benetton, some of their kicking was very good, but my God, they found grasp of the ball far too easy. Connacht just made mistake after mistake and handed the momentum to Benetton.
I mean, it should be said as well, Benetton are very good. Like Benetton, they have a quality pack there. You know, they've got, like I said, Menoncello, just casually Six Nations player of the tournament, just there, 21 years of age. But yeah, I think with Connacht, it feels that wheels are kind of coming off it a small bit, not in a bad way, but it just feels that vibes there are off. My vibe senses are tingling.
I think it's a bit like Ulster, I suppose, but it's a real kick in the stones, I think, for Connacht. I think that they had enough. Well, they obviously didn't, but I thought they had enough, or I felt they had enough to do well and really challenge in that cup. But again, a bit like Ulster, they're shit or bust now. It has to be a top eight finish in the URC, and they don't exactly have an easy run in either. So not the biggest of squads. It'll be a tough, tight running for them, especially I think with the Lions and their schedule at home for the vast majority of it. The Lions probably went from start of the season to not a runner to probably an outside bet to finish top eight. Yeah, it's just they're in a pretty shit spot, to be honest with you.
Like, yeah, they're playing Zebre this weekend,
but Zebre are sticky.
They are sticky.
I'm not saying they'll win, but like Zebre have, what is it, 9, this top of my head, but 9 bonus points.
They are scoring tries. Yeah. They are a difficult side to put away fully. Besides, I saw that myself in person down in Cork. They're good. I would say they're not a brilliant team, but they will score tries.
Like Connacht should have enough for it. Don't get me wrong, but it'll be tough. And coming off the back of that Benetton loss, you go back 2 weeks ago, that other Benetton loss, it's just in a place. And then you have Zebre then on the other hand, who've had 2 weeks to 2-3 weeks to prep for this game, like, and really aim for it. So I think it is going to be a very tough one for Connacht. I think they will have enough, but again, it's really, what is it, 5 games left now in the run in URC? Is it 5?
Yeah, 5.
Like, it's shit or get off the pot time. Like, it's just going to be a really tough, tight run in for Connacht at the end of this season. And I do think Zebre will be sticky. Now, again, Zebre could turn around and ship 40 points, but in a lot of games so far this URC season, that's not the Zebre we've seen.
Mm-hmm. Where they've conceded tries, but it feels that they're more capable of firing back themselves. That's as well.
I'm going to go for and I think they needed a 5-point win for Connacht in this.
Yeah, I see it being a high scoring game, but Connacht getting a bonus point as well. That's what I kind of, that's what I see.
Yeah. Moving on then to Munster.
Thank God.
Who are away to the Bulls on Saturday afternoon. First part of their trip to South Africa.
You know how I feel about a province in South Africa.
We may as well just call it now. Jeff is back in Munster.
I'm not. Because the only reason I'm not back in Munster. No. The only reason I'm not back in Munster is because I've been told if I back Munster when they're in South Africa, I'll be fucking killed, because
trouble.
Every time I back a province in South Africa, they lose. So I'm actually just doing one for the team here. I'm going for the Bulls just so hopefully it doesn't happen. That's what I'm doing.
Well, I mean, fair play to the Bulls who rested their players for the...
they were injured, man.
The Champions Cup quarterfinal.
Lazarus. It's a team of Lazarus. Lazarai?
Yeah, Lazarai. Got walloped in Franklin's Gardens. And there's been a miracle, lads. They've all recovered.
All 8 or 11 or however many of them suddenly all got off the physio table together.
It was a weird one this week because Jake White was asked this week about who will he have available for this week. And he was just like, nobody gives away who's fit and who's not ahead of games. And this is like, I'm literally reading the one from Munster right now about who's there, who's fit and who isn't. It's like, I can see here, look, they even show why they're not playing. Look, that guy's out with a knee injury.
I do like the NFL rules around this where they make you give injury updates. You don't have to be as specific, but you have to give injury updates. And if you're found to be doing it incorrectly or providing false information, you're fined heavily for it. And I think something like that should be brought in.
It feels weird just from Jake White. It just like feels he's kind of trying to play like this 4D chess. And it just feels that like all the while everyone's just like going, we're not buying any of this. Nobody believes you. Please stop.
What's interesting, I think, is you know, all the talk about Bulls and maybe being brought to, I don't know, justice by the powers that be in the EPC, or they're far and away not the first team to ever do that. Far, far and away not the first team to do it. But if you look at our own domestic league, and I'm not saying Leinster were
wrong.
Well,
we know who you're pointing the finger at, Jeff. You don't even need to say the team.
But like, when a certain team went to South Africa last year, they didn't exactly send their strongest squad, same 2 years ago, because they didn't have to.
Well, now, if they're to be believed, they did the same thing for the URC semi-final last year. So let's not even bring regular season.
To be fair, that's actually a very good point. Like, that Leinster have done that in theory, even though, look, they're all brilliant players. There's nothing to say to the Bulls that you'd be like, look, you can say, look, yeah, look, to an extent you bottled that quarterfinal, but they had 1 week to prep for it. They would have nearly had to leave the day after they won their quarterfinal against Lyon, who also sent a weakened team down to Pretoria. So like, I get it. Like, I mean, to be fair, it is the schedule that's causing them the issue. And look, they looked it. They started well enough in that game, but they fell away in the second half, as that tends to happen with teams who are, they've got a lot of few thousand kilometers under their belt ahead of a big game of rugby. But like, I think they can go about it a little bit better than do you know, all these guys are injured. Like,
well, yeah,
you can go about it a little bit better than that. Like, I think if they just said, we have to prioritize, we have a week's notice, we've got 8 flights there, however many flights we're going to prioritize our domestic league and put it on the EPCR. But when you have, like, you know, coming out here with this, like, yes, these guys are injured, it's like,
they all have 1 week injuries.
Like, come on now. Like, supposedly Marcel Coetzee is injured. He's could be out for the season. Fair enough. That's one guy. But leave them at home. But I would just say, like, there's no need for the cloak and dagger. I think people would believe you and accept that, look, we can't go from South Africa to England on a day's notice in the hope that, you know, we'll be able to win a game against a very difficult opposition and fly back for a must-win game in Pretoria against teams who are our rivals. I get it. But
yeah,
I could just do without the cloak and dagger shit.
So who do we reckon for this?
Munster fucking rugby.
Now you know where I stand on this and why I'm doing it. I'm going for the Bulls. You're welcome. I don't like it, but I'm doing us a service.
I'm wondering if Munster can pull this off. I think they need one win out of the two games in South Africa. I think hopefully this might be the easier one rather than the Sharks. I think the Sharks are coming into good form at the moment.
Sharks are becoming a Ferrari. Isn't that the comment?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And that's all. I'm going to go for Munster on that. Then finally, we have the Women's Six Nations. A fantastic performance from the Ireland women as they won 36-5 against Wales in Virgin Media Park, it's called now.
Yeah, Musgrave.
Musgrave.
Like, we're not sponsoring it. It's Musgrave. wasn't it just so good to finally, how would you say, enjoy it?
I think for me, it was an improvement on what could have been if things had stuck a bit more in the Italy game.
Yeah. I think the Italy game got away from them. I think they'd probably look back at that. And did we talk about this last week? Or no, did I jump off? Yeah. Sorry.
You jumped off and I jumped on and we talked about it, yeah.
I don't know if you mentioned this because I didn't listen back, but I think they would have looked at Italy as one that got away, to be honest.
Mm.
And there was a huge opportunity probably to just take the learnings there that weren't, like, the learnings weren't massive, if you know what I mean. The detail that they had to fix wasn't massive. And they did it. They did it really, really well. And fuck, I mean, they smoked Wales. Like, they smoked them. And you'd probably, if you're a Welsh fan, you're probably looking at that and you're thinking to yourself, what's the story with that one? Like, how come they've been professional for 2 years? Like, you look at Wales-Ireland last year, for example, that especially that first half. Every time Wales touched the ball or had a scrum last year, you were almost thinking to yourself, there's either a score here now or a penalty coming and more cheap yards, etc. Like, Wales smoked Ireland last year. And in 12 months, that turnaround is massive. Now, there's off days as well, don't get me wrong. But you would have said that Wales are ahead of the curve, like, when it comes to compared to Ireland. So, yeah, no, listen, it was an unbelievable performance. It was a joy to watch. A couple of tries, don't get me wrong. Like, there's one maybe if Wales were fully at the races, the charge down one maybe wouldn't have been scored. Just not from the charge down itself, but just maybe the Welsh players surrounding could have done better, etc. But listen, you can only play what's in front of you. We said the same thing about Leinster and La Rochelle, but England will pose a completely different set of questions this weekend.
Totally. I think like what I took from the Wales game is, number one, they cut out the individual errors that were there. You know, the drop balls and things like that. They tended to stick into the hands this time that against Wales. I thought they were pragmatic with their kicking game. They kicked really well when they needed to, but they also were they started to add layers and build on the attack, and you could start to see it. I thought some of the carrying from the tight five forwards was very good. What's the tight head? Haney, is it?
Chrissy Haney.
Chrissy Haney. Yeah. I thought her carrying has improved over the last 12 to 18 months massively. I thought she was excellent against Wales there. Had the likes of Sam Monaghan. Obviously, Aoife Wafer was superb.
Sublime.
Absolutely.
Really good, yeah.
You know, and
yeah, sorry, go on.
No, go on. Go ahead.
Like, it just really seemed like a performance that, like, you can look at the one against France, that loss against France in the opening game, and you can say, okay, this is one we're going to build on, because I know they lost, but like, it was a decent performance in comparison to what we saw in last year's Six Nations. But this is a proper things clicked performance. Like, we're on the way, we're doing something right here, like, etc. Now, I'm not naive enough to turn around and say, like, okay, they're going to beat England. But you look at the smokescreen that was last year's England versus Ireland game, I don't see it happening again. Do I think Ireland will win? No. Do I think Ireland are going to get absolutely trounced? Also, no. And I think when it comes to this England game, this is probably the best we can hope for, to be honest.
And this may sound a little bit disrespectful, I think the scoreline is almost irrelevant.
It's the performance.
It's the performance and how, like, they could lose by 40 points, but they could still put in a good performance that helps to build what they've put on in that Welsh game.
Yeah.
And then leads to the Scotland game.
I think, yeah, if I'm being honest, like, the next, how would you say, chance of a win? There's a word here, I just can't find it. It's in my head rolling around somewhere, but like, Scotland is the next, let's say, chance winnable. Of a win, winnable yeah. game. Like, it's not England. It's just not at this moment in time. And I think if we did say it was, that's probably more disrespectful. You know, it's naive and it's not paying due service, but the Scotland game is 100% a winnable game. It is. And if they can, let's say, continue to build through England, as you said, put in a performance, like, but I do think it is eyes on Scotland kind of a thing. Two wins from the Six Nations, we said at the start of it, two wins, three would be unbelievable. That would just be France and England that, you know, we failed to pip the post at. We said two/three. Well, we said two wins would be good, three wins unbelievable. Two wins in the Six Nations against Wales and Scotland is still poles apart from where we were last year. And
completely.
But even if you look at the number of points scored, tries scored, etc., if you look at the attack, the structure on D, it's way better than what it was. And I mean, isn't that kind of all we can ask? Like, if you look at projects, like, we talk about Ulster and we talk about Connacht being a project, etc., Munster being a project, you have to start that cycle somewhere. And you can look at the WXV3 and say, well, maybe that was the start of the project. I don't think so, because, you know, putting 100 points on a team serves no real fucking purpose, to be honest with you, in men's or women's rugby. But it's in this Six Nations that you finally get to see maybe the fruits of the Celtic Challenge, which has posed its own problems when it comes to adult women's rugby in Ireland, be it provincially, be it league-wise AIL, and then the knockdown from that as well. It has posed problems and it has caused problems, but ultimately we are seeing the fruits of that system being ingrained during that Celtic Challenge, both in attack and defence. And I mean, that game against Italy, probably one that got away, but certainly that game against Wales, we're seeing the fruits of it now. England, yeah, listen, it's just one of those games that you just have to take two Panadol and go for it, kind of a thing. But that Scotland game, 100% winnable, and two wins in the Six Nations, plus the number of tries scored, etc., and the shape that we've put on D, it's a huge improvement. And ultimately, there's, you know, praise where it's due or credit where it's due, you know?
Yeah. Oh, look, I totally agree. This is probably 2-3 year project. And you're only at the very start of it. It's got to be something that they build on. The worst thing that could happen is that Wales performance becomes a once off, and that's what they've got to avoid. And just make sure that they see this out now to the end of the Six Nations. And as I said, I'm not necessarily looking at the scoreline on the England game this Saturday afternoon. I'm looking at the performance in that and what they're looking to do. It can you see the same things been, you know, you get a structure at the line out. You know you're going to be overpowered in the scrum. Can you keep the handling errors down? Can you actually start to be pragmatic in your kicking, get something out of that and look to do something with ball in hand?
I think we'll see a lot of what we saw against France in terms of the kicking game. There won't be a lot of ball in hand. And if there's possession in their own half, it's possession for one phase. And then I'd say it's going to be kicked deep into back three. And I fully understand why. Like, why would you play ball in your own half against England? But I think we will see a lot of what we saw against France. It won't be the same game it was against Wales because the opposition won't allow that. So,
yeah,
I think we will see an awful lot of that. Before we finish up, I got not called out is the wrong word, but there was no winner announced for our mystery box last week because I left early. So the winner for the mystery box competition 2 weeks ago is going to be James Darcy. I believe the question was the top tackler and it was Niamh Jones. So well done, James Darcy, even though I think the answer was given once or twice. The question for this week, I actually don't have one. Do you have a question? Because I just remember there we were doing this.
Who has been signed by Leinster to replace Andrew Goodman as the attack coach for next year?
I was going to base it on Ireland, but yeah, there we go. We'll go with that one. So who has been signed by Leinster to replace Andrew Goodman as the attack coach from next year? Spelling counts.
Yes, have to get that. Have to spelling get the counts. Correct spelling of the surname, yeah.
So answers go to, what's our email address?
provincialstateofmind@gmail.com.
At gmail.com, that's the one. Sorry, I forgot. So there we go. That's this week's mystery box question.
All right, we'll round it up there, folks. Thanks very much for listening to our ramblings and for supporting the podcast. Please do rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you listen, as it really helps. And also be sure to share the podcast on social media. Hope you have a good week, and the three of us will be back next week to chat again.